I used to train alongside Carl Froch a lot of the time. Obviously, I mean, he was like hitting the bags and working pads. And Tyson used to train at the same gym as me. So he'd be finishing pads before I'd start. And they'd always hang around and watch us afterwards.
Yeah, like, yeah. Oh, well, you never stop learning when it's a fight at the end of the day. When it's, you know, whether it be, boxing or whether it be UFC, you never stop, even it's still the fight game. So you're intrigued. You can't help. That's why I'm asking loads of questions.
Did you do any other kind of martial arts or combat sports?
I did kickboxing first before I went into boxing. But I did kickboxing first. I started when I was 8 and finished when I was like 11, and then started boxing when I was 11. But I was pretty good with my movement, because my footwork's always been pretty good, even when I was fighting. The changing of the angles and the in and out and stuff like that. But I was always a little bit on the short side. So, when it come to kicking, if I judged the distance right and I could get in close and I could use my fists, I was doing all right. But 9 times out of 10, whenever I fought anyone that was half decent, they'd keep me at the end there, you know what I mean? So then I went to boxing. That's where it basically stemmed from. I think it was a little bit better with them. But my footwork, but the difference between when you fight someone that's that little bit, don't forget, I was only 10, 11. But even back then, when you fight someone that's that little bit tastier, makes a difference.
Yeah. So did your style develop naturally then? Were you naturally a pressure fighter?
Yeah, I've always been aggressive. At first, I got into kickboxing because I was into Bruce Lee films as a youngster. Right. So it was like, Dad, take me to kickboxing, take me to karate, So I went to karate and found out that, as I mentioned, that my talent was with my fist, not so much, but I was always very aggressive. The first time someone booted me, my head fell off. I was like, what? I couldn't wait to go back on Friday to get my own back, yeah. You know what I mean? And I've always been that. And it's quite a strange one, because normally it's passed down through the family tree. Either your dad's done it or grandfather or someone in the family's done it. But no one ever done it for me. And when they saw me kicking off and how aggressive I was and like that, the whole family were like, don't get this. You played football. Where's this come from? So it must come in waves. Because, Mark Campbell's gone professional now. Do you know what I mean? And Matthew, my brother, he's like Jack. He's had 2 amateur fights and won them both now. So it's like, it's come from nowhere in the family to now everyone wants to do it. So it's good. Right?
What's that like then, watching the younger generations following your footsteps?
Makes you feel very proud, but horrible in the sense. To watch your son fight and your son get hit. And I think it's more, I think it's sat on the outside knowing, when you're watching your son fight and you think, you should be doing this, should be doing that. And say he's not doing it, you can't get in and help. Do you know what I mean? So that's the frustrating thing about it. But, I went into boxing, so he didn't have to. But, the fact that he's chose to go in the hardest game of all with a dad that achieved what I did, he couldn't have picked talk about fair play to him. And he's had a little bit of stick saying, his performances have been a little bit iffy early on and that. But, I think he should be getting a pat on the back for trying it anyway.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And he only had like 24 amateur fights. I had 75. You know what I mean? He's a babby. And unlike me, where there was no social media when I went professional, everybody knows Campbell Hatton. I think he's got it tough. And I think the way he's handled a bit of stick and how he's improving, makes me feel very proud.
So, one of the first fights you went to see was Nigel Benn, Chris Eubank, right? Both of those guys have got their sons that are competing now, but they've both chosen different directions. Chris Eubank's very hands-on, Nigel Benn's very kind of, I'm going to stay back and let him have his own career. Like, how do you balance that relationship?
I'm a little bit stay back. I said to my brother, Matthew, even before Campbell, we even discussed him going professional. He was just doing boxing. I said to Matthew in Tenerife years ago, I said, I'd like you to train. If anyone's going to train Campbell, I said, I'd like you to train him. Because I said, I don't know how I'd feel in the corner, with the nerves and this and that. I said, if Campbell wanted me to go in the corner, I'd pull my socks up and give it a go and I'd probably do it. But, ideally, it's all turned out for the best, So Matthew has, initially wanted, Matthew's gone in the corner with Campbell. I can manage him. And even though I wouldn't say I'm standoff. I'm let Matthew do, go and manage him, so I look after his, you know, his opponents and his, you know, that side of the things. But in the gym, you know, Matthew's doing a great job with him, and needless to say, even though I'm on the sidelines, I'll stick my nose in when I feel the need to. Everything's flowing beautiful at the minute. He's improving. I'm really excited about the future. I mean, it took Conor Benn to find that form and get to where he's got. You know, he had a few, you know, speed bumps along the way. Chris Eubank Jr., he got beat by Billy Joe, you know what I mean, which is obviously a top level. But, I mean, I think Campbell's got half a chance of doing what Conor's done and Eubank Jr.'s done. Just give him time and get off his back. Just give him time, let him develop, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's only a babby.
Yeah. So what about your journey? Because you're back in training camp now, and it's been a few years since you competed. Same as me, obviously, we're both in the same situation. What does it feel like starting a training camp now? You're 43 right now. Yeah. So I'm just about to turn 40. So what advice would you give me for a 40-year-old?
Yeah, it's good. You can listen to your own body. Do you know what I mean? It's like I always, when I was fighting, I used to spend just a couple of weeks just shedding weight. Because I thought to myself, you know, I mean, I'm not going to go straight in the gym for the first day of my training camp and start sparring, you know, and doing my weights and the physical. So, where obviously you need the food, you know, you fuel, do you know what I mean? So I always used to just spend a fortnight just dropping weight, doing like, you know, 3 steady workouts a day, sweating, very, very extreme on my diet, just to drop a load of weight. But it has took me a little bit longer. I mean, people said, how quick have you shifted the weight? But for me, I think it's come off a little bit hard
this time.
Just a little bit harder this time. Because, listen, you're getting older. And I think what advice I could give you is just, you know, listen to your own body. You know, when, you know, we've still got, you know, a couple of months, you know, still to go. I'm delighted of where I'm at. But I think, you know, when you're at our age, you know, if you, you know, sometimes you... I don't think we need to go through that pain barrier. I think we've got that time, and I think it's listen to your own body. If you're thinking to yourself, you know what, I've worked hard this week, I'm a little bit shattered. I think at 43, I think we can have the day off. Have a day off, you know what I mean? And if you have that day off, and just don't be scared of admitting that we're getting a little bit older, have a couple of days off. So when you have that couple of days off, you come back stronger.
Yeah.
I think that's the one, mate.
So you think you're a little bit more forgiving of yourself and a little bit more understanding of the process?
Yeah, I think listen to your own body. And I mean, when we were young, it was like, you know, you'd feel tired. No, I'm not telling myself I'm tired. I'm not telling me you're not tired. Get on with it. and there will be times like that in the training camp where we'll have to do that. You know what I mean? Because that's the whole point. You've got to go through that, you know, that pain barrier of training. That's what you've always have to do. But I mean, not at this far out, and not at, you know, at certain stages. I think certain stages you go through that pain barrier, but as you're getting a little bit older, I think, you know what, before I start doing that 8 rounds of sparring there, you know what I mean, I'm going to have a couple of days off before it. Or you're just tweaking your approach a little bit, bearing in mind your age. And I think if we do that, I think come fight night, we'll be better for it.
So what was the session today then? Is this quite a typical Wednesday session for
you? That's just the norm, you know, for my lads, you know what I mean? They'll tick over that. They'll tick that over that. Because, I mean, the novice professionals, excuse me, like I say, when you these lads, and Chloe, but funny, because obviously we train a lady boxer, but I think at this part of the career, they're always in training camp. Do you know what I mean? Once you got to that championship level where you have 3 fights a year, yeah, you can do the training camp. But where they're at, 4 unbeaten, 5 unbeaten, 7 unbeaten, 12 unbeaten, they're not preparing for the next fight in 5 weeks. They're preparing for the next 5 years,
yeah.
6 years, 7 years. So you've got to be in there working on the strength, on the resistance work, the weights work, learning about diet, what to eat and drink on a weekly basis. Do you know what I mean? They've got to pretty much, they're in a year-round training camp as far as I'm concerned now. So that's the norm for them. And as the progressing, they'll get these 8 rounds out stronger and stronger and better, and the quality will get better. And then what we tend to do then, when the fight's about 3 weeks out, we just knock it up a gear. You know, a little bit more zippier, a little bit more heavyweight, everything a little bit more explosive, just to get that little bit down the home straight of the training camp.
Yeah. And did you find those first couple of weeks where you were like shedding weight and getting your mind on training? Was that a part of your process? Was it quite important?
Because very important.
That was a signature of your preparation, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you tell me, I don't know if you see me on my social media, but when I used to work out on the bags and, you know, on the pads with my fighters, but I used to do my own workout on the bags. And even when I was like a beach whale and a bit on the weighty side, I was still faster feet and my timing and hands, were, you know, my movement was still good. But because I'd not, you know, for such a while, the one thing I was worried about was my strength and conditioning to come back. You know, I thought to myself, the last thing will come back will be my timing and my footwork, because I've still got it, even when I'm fat, you know, when carrying a bit of weight. And, you know, it's worked, you know, worked Bob on, shedding my weight. And then when I started doing the physical stuff, and then I started only recently just doing the pads again. And, you know, today, believe it or not, was the first pad of it in my training camp. I mean, I've still got 8 weeks to go. And I felt rapid as anything, you know what I mean? So I think it's just taking the experience we've learned over the years, listening to our bodies and taking the advice of your trainer. That goes without saying, you know what I mean? And just, you know, with your experience, picking the bones out of it, which you think works best. Mm. I think, yeah.
And what are your thoughts? Obviously, you know, you're fighting Marco Antonio Barrera, who's another legend in his own right. What are your thoughts on him? Because he's a friend of yours as well. You're very familiar with one another. Another boxer that's really good with the fundamentals, just like yourself. Does that change anything with this July 2nd? You know, because he's not a... I mean, like, say when he fought Prince Nassim, he stuck to his good fundamentals and he didn't need that athleticism that Prince Nassim, you know, ran his career off. Both of you guys being such good technicians, I feel like it's going to be quite a technical battle between the two of you.
I need to, you know, get on the front foot and you know, get after him, as they say. And I think Marco will use his movement. He's got a wonderful left jab, his movement and his boxing ability. And listen, you know, me and Marco both, if he's thinking like I'm thinking, me and Marco used to fight at pace for 12 three-minute rounds, which is 38 minutes. This is 8 2-minute rounds at 16 minutes. So me and Marco, in our minds, are thinking we won't have to come up for air come fight night. But I won't have to come up for air on the front foot and he won't have to come up for air on the back foot. It'll be a technical fight, but it'll be him movement, good left jab work, combination punching, and me having to move in on him quick, cut the ring down. And, you know, it's an exhibition. But at the end of the day, you know, even though we're tired, we're not dead. We're not going to... I mean, I'm not going to want to go in there and bay for blood and go for the knockout and everything like that. You know, it's not that way. But I don't want Marco to come here and stand me on my head and box my ears off. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, he's not want to come all the way to Manchester and me do the same to him. So that's where the competitive comes in. And because me and Marco have been friends for years, mates, whatever, we'll know what we need to do for it to make it entertaining for the fans. And we'll know, you know, it would lie pretty much there. You know, that's a yawn. And that's too much. And I think if we keep it there and venture every now and again a little step that way, it'll be entertaining for the fans. But we're friends, we're both former champions, we're both professionals. Me and Marco both know the score. We've got to make it entertaining for the fans, but we know what's too much, and that's there, I think. That's it, yeah.
What are your expectations for yourself from the fight?
The expectations for myself is, I mean, it's been good for my own well-being, going into training camp, getting fit again, you know, planning my diet out, planning my training regime over a number of weeks, planning my game, plan out, you know, it's like, and you'll be doing the same, it's like turning your back, he's turning the clock back, it's so good, I mean, and also, you know, for mental health, you know, we're coming out of lockdown, we're putting like a concert type event on, you know, to try and, it's like a celebration, because I mean, there's people out there that are listening, I mean, we all lost, you know, people through COVID, you know, it's been a terrible time, I lost family through mental health because of the COVID, you know, so, it's helped my well-being. If people out there and go, God, remember Ricky 10 years ago, where he was? He was suicidal, massively overweight, heavily into drink, heavily into drugs, wanted to kill himself. Look at him now at 43, 10 years on. Look what he can do. So if that inspires a few people out there, then that's a good thing. And ultimately, the one thing I missed, Dan, when I retired, you know, the worst thing for me was walking from the change room to the ring. I used to think, oh, what am I doing this for? You idiot, you're doing it again, aren't you? But then when you retire and you put your feet up, that walk from that change room to the ring, that nerve, that adrenaline kick, that nervousness, when it's gone, that's the one thing you miss. And, you know, for me to get that feeling again and for you to get that feeling again and to have that crowd roar again, you know what I mean? And to help the people with mental health. And it's because it's with Marco Antonio Pereira. You know what I mean? People say, well, why are you doing it? I think if you've got to ask me that question, why am I doing it? You know, you need to get back to school. Mm. You don't know what you're, you know.
Yeah.
That's my view, yeah.
Yeah. Have you started visualising the arena and the walkout yet?
Yeah, I'm visualising it, you know, just because obviously it was, you know, everyone, I always said that, you know, the best part of my career and the biggest achievement was my fan base and the crowds and the atmosphere I used to generate and all that. And I'm sort of like, you know, concentrating on my training and but thinking, ooh, I'm gonna feel that again. And that's why I'm doing it. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's an exhibition there, but we've still got to go out, you know, you and your fight, me and my fight, and do a professional job, look the part, try and get the better, you know, and that's where Marco will be thinking the same, you know what I mean? And that's why we are, that's why we're fighters. Do you know what I mean? If you think, oh, I'll just go in there, jab around for 8 2-minute rounds, you know what I mean, and wave to the crowd and that's that. That's not us. That's not what fighters do. We want to make it entertaining. We want to hear the crowd roar again, you know what I mean? You know, where youngsters can look at us, people that have got mental health can turn around and go, look at these old farts here. Look at them. Look what they're doing here, you know what I mean? I'm excited about the whole shebang, me, to be honest. Yeah. Yeah.
What's your relationship with your career, your boxing career, as it is? Do you look back on it fondly? Do you have memories that you look at and think to yourself, I'm so privileged to have had that, or does it feel like a long way in the past?
All of them, to be honest with you, all the memories. I mean, even the bad things. I think the bad things that happened to me personally outside of the ring, you know what I mean? It's made me what I am today, and I've used them bad things, you know, that, you know, to use them and do positive things now with them. Do you know what I mean? I was like, you know, suicidal. Do you know what I mean? I was an absolute mess for, you know, the local hero done well to see me sat in the pub crying and overweight and just, it wasn't nice for family to see, it wasn't nice for friends to see, but when they see me on July 2nd, you know what I mean? I know they're going to be proud of me again. I know the fans are going to be proud of me again because, you know, it's not just going in there for one last shebang. They know, the fans and my friends and my family know what I went to a few years ago and say, look at him now. And that's why you're doing it. And it upsets me when people say, why are you doing it? Don't do it. That's the only disappointing thing about the thing, because, I mean, if you can't listen to the enthusiasm in my voice and the passion in the way we're speaking here now and saying why, so many reasons why I want to do it. And if, you know, if you're listening to this and you're still confused, you might as well sort yourself out.
did you think about retirement when you were competing? Like, was there a point when you were active in training camp and thought to yourself, you know, one day this is going to come to an end and what's that going to feel like?
I pretty much, you know, I mean, just after the Pacquiao fight, when I got destroyed in 2 rounds, you know what I mean? I think when I fought Mayweather, I think my best days were slightly behind me, but I thought, you know, I've worked so hard, you know, I beat Costuzu and then unified the belts from Hauser, then I became a two-weight world champion against Collazo, then I moved back down and got my old IBF title back, fought Castillo, I had the Ring magazine belt, so I'd sort of like done everything. But I mean, I also had a chance then to challenge the pound for pound number one, you know. Well, even though I maybe thought, oh, maybe my best days are just starting to leave me behind, what am I going to do? I've not worked that hard to fight the pound for pound number one king and go, no, I've had enough now, you know. So, but then when I got beat, I thought to myself, you know, then the fighter in you thinks to myself, yeah, better days are behind me, but I can't go out on there when we're getting knocked out, you know. So you have another one and you have another one. But I knew after the Mayweather fight, you know, the best days were behind me, but I had some great times after the, you know, I Lascano fight, City Manchester Stadium, 60,000 fans, and then I beat Paulie Malignaggi. And those days, that will stay with me forever. So I did right to carry on, but then when Manny Pacquiao beat me, I knew that was the time it to totally come. But then that's when my head fell off, to be honest with you, because I thought to myself, I've been doing this all my working life and I've got destroyed in 2 rounds. Now you have to retire. And I was sat on the couch thinking, what am I going to do now? What am I going to do? No boxing. What am I going to do now? And I just, that's when I plummeted, you know, personally, yeah.
But I remember there was a point, was it a couple of weeks before the Pacquiao fight, where you had a rough sparring session and you kind of said to yourself, this... you didn't feel like you were going to win before the fight?
Oh, I mean, yeah. I think I overcooked the training a little bit. I don't know whether it was miles on the clock. I think all them things considered. I mean, Floyd Mayweather Senior couldn't do southpaw pads, which, you know, I'm not saying that's the reason why I got beat, but you stick everything on top of, you know, things. I think it was coming. I mean, the sparring partners, I was pinging them, as they say, you know, a few weeks earlier. I was outboxing them and looking brilliant. And then coming down the home straight, 2 weeks out, they were picking me off and they wanted to clip me and didn't hurt me. I was off balance more than anything, but it hit me and I went on my ass and I thought, oh my, maybe this was a mistake, this, you know, I mean, I'm fighting the best. And me, Manny was blasting everyone at the time. De La Hoya, you know, Margarita, Cotto, you know. I thought, this ain't going well. But, you know, maybe I should have pulled out, maybe I shouldn't, but, you know, I went with it. And, you know, what happened, happened. You know, when you fight Manny Pacquiao, when you fight like I do, whether I was in good form or whether I was slightly past it, what happened can always happen. Because he was blasting everyone at the time, so it was a bit of a hard pill for me to swallow.
Yeah, you think back to when you first started competing as a kid. What were your motivations then? What was it you were trying to achieve as a boxer? And did it change throughout your career?
No, I just did it at first because I love Nigel Benn. I think just going in the gym, you know, just training every day and learning stuff and everything like that, which I wish I could have took that into school because when I went into school, I was like, couldn't stand it. But when I went in the gym with boxing, like learning things, or showing you a certain move or a combination, I was hooked. I can't get that right. Can't wait to go back Friday. I'll get it right if it kills me, this. And then you probably feel...
Like that, you know, footwork,
yeah,
from today.
Yeah,
I'm like,
and it's like, you know, and stuff like that. So I always loved it. And then... As I got a little, I never really took it seriously at first. I loved it, but never really took it seriously. But then as I started to win national amateur titles and stuff like that, and then I went training in the pro gyms, and there was like current champions like Carl Thompson, who was British cruiserweight world cruiserweight champion, I should say, and Enzie Bringham, British like middleweight champion. And, you know, they were saying, you're going to go all the way, you, if you keep at this. And then the penny started dropping a little bit more. Listen, Ricky, you've got a chance of... taking this hobby into something that could make you a living here, you know what I mean? And it went from there to there, yeah.
And do you recognise that you're that person now for a lot of other fighters? You're the person that can say you're going to do well and then...
Absolutely, you know what I mean? I anyone I turn around and say to, and Campbell, more than anyone, listen, you know what I mean? I just started off at the local boxing gym just round the corner, do you know what I mean? Oh, any kid that comes up to me, you know what I mean? I come from the council estate, and that's pretty much where boxers or, you know, MMA or UFC fighters come from. We don't come from Cambridge or Oxford. We come from council estates, don't we? You know what I mean? And I just come from the council estate, just went to the local boxing gym, worked hard, tried, listened, learned, and look where I got, you know. And to hear sometimes kids going, oh, to have half of what you've got, you know, I'd be happy with. You've got to set your goals a lot higher than that. You've got to reach for the stars. Because, I mean, listen, you know, I was from the council estate and done it. Cal Frock was in the council estate and done it. You know, Joe Kawasaki was from Newport council estate and done it. So where are you from? Why can't you do it? That's the way you've got to look at it. And I think that's what I always try and say to the youngsters coming through. Do you know what I mean? You know, look at, you know, what I achieved with pride, but don't think that you can't do it. You've got to set your goals a lot higher than that in life.
So... One more question and then I'll leave you alone. So it's July 2nd. I've just fought and I've hopefully had a decent performance and you're about to walk out and there's going to be a few people in the arena, like there will be for me, that will be anxious, they'll be nervous for me as they will be for you. What's your message to those people and what would you like to have them feel once the fight's over?
Don't worry about me. A lot of people say, don't worry, we're worried about you, Ricky. Why? We don't want to see you get hurt again, you know what I mean? If you look at me now, the shape I'm in, you know what I mean, after, you know, 10 years retired or whatever it is, doing what on the pads, doing this, doing that, you know, you look at how much weight, you know, I've lost, how I'm wanting to do positive things for mental health, how I feel like I'm encouraging youngsters that are coming up to me and everything like that. Would you rather see me in the ring with Marco Antonio Barrera doing an exhibition, or would you rather see me 8 years ago in the gutter wanting to kill myself, taking drugs, drinking myself to death, would you rather see me back then or would you rather see me now? And when you see me July 2nd, the performance that me and Marco put on and the show will put on, you'll wonder why you're worried in the fucking first place.
Are you proud of yourself? Are you proud of yourself?
I'm very proud of myself. I'm very proud of myself because what, you know, just family and friends say, we're proud of you. We're proud of you because they've been there firsthand. And saw me at the bottom rung of the ladder. They've seen how bad it was. I mean, and there's people out there that I've only seen it in the paper and have only seen me, you know, just a quick in the pub or, you know, my family and friends and my loved ones have seen me when it was at me really, really worst. And that's why I had less convincing me family than I have the public, because the family can see how, you know, up for it I am, up for my training, what good health I'm in, what positive things I'm doing. You think the family would be the first people that I need to convince, but they're not, because they can see. They can see how bad it was. They can see where I'm at now, how happy I'm at now. And they're convincing. And I think I hope this interview, mate, has convinced a lot of the public out there. You can just see, you know, I've got the fire in my belly out now. And I know it's an exhibition and everything like that, but people say, why are you doing it? Just look at a smile. That's it.
Well, I mean, just for me personally, I mean, you know, I watched you throughout my career. I used to listen to Oasis on the way to conditioning because of watching you hitting the bag and that pace that you would set and that tenacity that you had. So from me and from all the other fighters out there that you've inspired, I'm really excited to see you back. And to be on the same card is an absolute honour. And to welcome you into your gym
looking
today.
Looking forward to it. And to be honest with you, you know, I mean, listen, you know, like I said earlier, you know, we know our best days are behind us. We know we've won our gloves up, but we've still got dreams. We've still got goals we need to set. You know what I mean? And we're living them. And July 2nd, I think it's going to be sharing the ring. But for me, Marco and Tony Barrera in Manchester, and I've done so many good things in my career, You've done so many things in your career. I think it's one of them at 43 years of age and 40 years of age. I think you're going to look back in years to come and go, well, we did well there. So, yeah.
Ricky, thank you so much. HattonBarrera.com. Make sure you go and get some tickets. It's going to be a good night for both of us. We're going to have a great time, and so are you.